This is Market Plus, one of three podcasts from the program. Please subscribe today. This is Josh Bittner saying thank you.
This is the Friday, September 25, 2020 version of the Market Plus segment. Joining us now, Angie Setzer and Chris Swift. So Chris, nothing like a good baptism by fire because Angie was out buying steaks. Thank you for your flexibility during the program.
Absolutely.
You are in Nashville, Tennessee. We talked to you on the M2M podcast about a month and a half ago, and you told us a little bit of background. If memory serves, decades covering livestock. Tell me, give me your elevator speech back when we still rode elevators.
Sure, absolutely. I started my professional career in 1990 with J.C. Bradford and Company. I moved to a Rosenthal Collins Group, where I branch managed an office for close to 14 years. And then after 2014, I founded Swift Trading Company, a GIB with Rosenthal Collins Group, clearing through Rosenthal Collins Group.
Now, if anybody goes to Nashville and travels, there's a good chance they maybe have walked by your office or at least seen it real close, right?
It's very possible. I'm on 16th Avenue, which is considered Music Row and has tremendous amount of history. And if you're a Ken Burns fan, when he did the country music publication on there, then 16th Avenue was a large part of that.
You see, he's done his homework, Angie, about what we air on PBS on Ken Burns. That's really good, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
All right, Chris, we have an African swine fever question. We'll get to you in a moment. But, Angie, I want to get back into the grains just a tiny little bit. You know, I was texting with some people this week about their progress. They're flying along. I mean, it was a sprint to put this crop in. It's going to be a sprint to take this thing out. There's going to be no breather. In 2 weeks, some people are going to be done looking around going, what harvest low? So my question, which came from Roger in the Milky Way, he was asking us via Twitter, what, if any, correlation is there between harvest lows for corn and beans and the national harvest progress percentage of those said crops?
Oh, goodness. That's for someone with a lot of Excel spreadsheet background, because I don't really have that. I think it's pretty obvious that when you're rolling right along, right, you're going to see some continued pressure on futures. But, you know, I think harvest progress this year is going to be a little bit of something that's hard to pin down, just simply because Iowa, if you don't have that much of a crop to harvest, it does move a lot quicker. And so I think, you know, you are going to see that in a lot of those places that have really been impacted by the drought and the derecho, is that you are going to whip right through that crop a lot quicker than what you ever maybe have before.
Well, just case in point, here in Iowa and parts of Illinois, it was 2 weeks since we last had any significant rain. There's not another significant chance of rain above 20% other than this weekend for another week. So just in that sense, it's drying down in the field. And that's also another way to speed things through. You're sitting there at an elevator. What's the average moisture level coming through there?
We're behind. I don't even want to come off like I'm bragging, because we did catch some rain there the last half of August into September, and then we cooled down. Beans have been coming in, though. The last 2 years, we've been having beans come into the elevator on Thanksgiving at 23% moisture. And so this year we're celebrating that the wettest we've had come through so far has been 15. I have had some folks say that they definitely need rain because they're trying to get beans off at 8 to 9%. You run into shatter, you run into a lot of issues. It gets really just frustrating, and, you know, without a little bit of that breather. So I do feel for folks that are out there, you know, with 2 weeks of harvest progress in and 2 weeks of not really much in the way of rain ahead of them. And obviously you've got to get that crop out, but just make sure you're being safe about it and giving yourself that time if you need it to take a breath.
So there are stories of maybe more people selling their crop right off of the combine. Can you confirm?
Yeah, we have a lot of sales going on right now. It makes sense. The market is definitely not incentivizing holding soybeans at this point in time. There's very little carry. Basis is good. It's strong, and it's been strengthening, at least locally here as of late, as a lot of commercials, you know, you start to see the combines roll as an elevator and you're not full. And so there's this moment of panic that you're not going to be full. And so that's the opportunity that we're really seeing from a basis standpoint here locally. I think you're seeing the same thing in some areas where, you know, no one's full, no one's choking on the crop yet, but they see progress happening. And so they're getting nervous And so that's the sweet spot to be locking in some basis opportunity. And with the recent rally, you know, yeah, we have fallen off 50 cents on soybeans, but we're still up $1.50 from where we were the start of August. You know, throw in a little bit of that CFET money and you're not doing too awful bad. And so I think you're going to see some continuation of selling, you know, right now, soybeans especially. I think corn might get put away for a while just to see kind of what happens there, you know, with export pays, with ethanol, and with feed demand.
Okay. All right. Well, Chris, here's one of the fun things we like to do in Market Plus, and that's give you questions that come from either Twitter or Facebook. This one came via Facebook, and it's from Justin in Ithaca, Michigan. Is there an update on African swine fever in Germany and Europe? Is it still having an impact on the hog market? I believe this week we went up to, was it a dozen hogs that had been found in Germany? What's the impact there on the market?
You know, from a perspective of export, it halted all of their exports. So that was the biggest reason why we thought we saw here in the U.S. a little bit of a boost in the hog market. As Europe has been a large exporter to China, that cuts off a large swath of Europe, with Germany shutting their borders down to China's exports. I don't think it's a major outbreak like what we saw in China. There is such a significant difference in how hogs are fed between the two countries. We know that China pre-COVID or pre-ASF, approximately 60-70% of their herd was still fed a swill. So we know that they didn't have a large compounds of hogs where that they could control the feed sources. And with that combination of those hogs being able to root around into wild areas where they could be exposed to the wild boars, as well as being fed swill feed that might have already been contaminated from another pork product of some kind. So I think there's a big difference between the two, that you probably won't see the size of the outbreak in Germany because it can be greater contained. That pork production there is under a much more controlled environment than what it is in China.
There was a story this week about supplies in China that, hey, they might be out of cold storage. We never really truly know what's going on there, but what's going on there? I mean, are they running low? What do you hear?
I don't know. I don't pay a great deal of attention to it because most of it is hearsay. And we were privileged to know a few people that knew quite a bit about it. But as time goes by and the stories begin to fade, so too does the news. We saw the abrupt news that came out because a lot of it was being able to be sneaked out of the country. They've tightened those grips now down on any kind of publications going out. So we really don't know. So I don't try to outguess that.
It is hard to guess. All right. So, Angie, there's this other little thing in the news called an election. The House, the Senate, the presidency are all up there. And there's a question from Jonathan. He asks us via Twitter. He's in Wisconsin. He says, is the November election volatility built into the market, or is there more to come?
I think there's a lot more to come, unfortunately. I feel like, you know, I think we've seen it a couple different times this week where there's questions about whether or not we'll even know at the end of Election Day what the results are and whether or not they will be recognized, you know, and I hope that, you know, we wake up in the middle of November and everything's kind of back to normal, whatever that is. But I think as we work through October, you're going to see that election volatility really, really pick up. I'm really nervous about some of the economic things that we're going to see. I think there's some long tails that are really going to start to impact what's taking place from COVID. I've had this feeling for a while now that, I don't know if you remember 2008 pre-election, you know, it was beneficial to certain parties to have that sort of impending feeling of collapse with the residential housing market. You know, what does it look like with commercial real estate and some of those things where we are seeing these places really say, hey, we're not coming back into the office until middle of next year. You know, we are seeing some real struggles on that side of things. So I think it's just begun. Honestly, I don't think it's factored in to a real level and probably won't be until we're a week beyond the election and feel comfortable that the results will be recognized and are what they are.
You alluded to this a little bit at the end of our broadcast portion, and Russ in Postville, Iowa, and there was a little back and forth here with another commenter. He says, is China buying a result of them conceding that President Trump will be reelected and trade reforms will continue, basing this on knowledge that markets are anticipatory, and I assume that the Chinese are too. I mean, that's been... It's like a producer hedging their bets, right? You're playing both sides if you can. The Chinese are no different. Remember the on election night when the polls told us Hillary Clinton was going to win, and then all of a sudden, midway through 9, 10 o'clock at night, when it looked like Donald Trump was going to win, the pre-market indicator just flipped, and it wasn't necessarily saying that it was going down or up. It was just everybody's readjusting. So the question is... What is this? Why China's buying? I'll ask it that. Is it our election?
I think they are hedging their bets. I think there's a certain level of action that they're in line with what's taking place. They're following through. They're giving in or working through their phase one trade deal agreements because we're going to have to start working on phase two, and he's not going anywhere for 4 years. You know, at the same time, I think they have a need for those bushels. And so I think that, you know, I said that for a long time. I thought, and I feel like COVID was somewhat bullish in the sense that it changed and modernized how their food was looked at in their country. And so I think there's a level of that that's taking place in general. They're also hedging their bets. You know, it's La Nina, what happens in South America from a production standpoint, you know, and so I think they're just kind of speaking for supply and making sure that they're ready no matter what happens. And they know they're going to need the supply, but they also know that they can say, never mind, we didn't need as much as what we thought. And so we can kind of move on, you know, kind of see an ebb and flow from there.
All right, real fast, 30 seconds on cotton. I made you do the homework. So that's one's been chopping kind of steady. Where are we headed?
Right now, it looks like there's going to be some strength. It really makes you wonder what's going to take place. You know, can't help but wonder if it doesn't take some strength from softs. There's been some question about some production shortages. And then obviously there's still some questions as to whether or not we're going to ban some of those imports of cotton goods from China based on human rights.
All right, Chris, I guess I'll let you do a 30-second answer, too, on politics and livestock. Does it matter?
Politics, absolutely it does, because it impacts the consumer. And as the supplies of cattle seem to be pretty steady going forward, even with hogs going forward for the next at least 3 to 6 months, there's really not a great deal that can change from the supply side. So anything that's going to impact the consumer discretionary spending habits is going to be of great, great importance to us.
Well, we had one consumer in this broadcast buying steaks during our time. Thanks, Angie.
That's right.
Angie Setzer, Chris Swift, thank you so very much for joining us here. Chris, I hope it was okay and you'll come back again.
Absolutely. I thoroughly enjoyed it, Paul. Thank you for having me.
All right, and Angie, we'll see you in a few weeks. Thank you both.
Thank you.
All right, next week, we'll bring together a four-person roundtable. You thought this was a panel. Well, we're going to bring four. We got Naomi Bloom, Ted Seifert, Elaine Cubb, and Matt Bennett. They'll break down the quarterly grain stocks and look at the trends that are also happening in the commodity markets. I'm Paul Yeager. Thank you so very much for watching, listening, or reading. Have a great week.